Hi, welcome to another episode of Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron. This podcast is brought to you by Bullet Map Academy. And today I've got a very interesting guest. We're going to talk a lot about dyslexia and the ocean. Dyslexia and water, and the dynamic aspects of dyslexia. Dyslexia and photography, dyslexia and surfing, sailing, just anything to do with water, even dyslexia and skiing, because my guest today has quite a dynamic, fluid journey through life and dynamic, fluid way of thinking. He's a photographer, works with Patagonia, with whiskey distilleries. He's based in Scotland. He travels around the world doing water photography, event photography, all kinds of different kinds of photography. He's been doing that for the last 8 to 10 years. And he is really dyslexic. And I want you to hear his story, because it might give you some insights into yourself, into your child, and definitely will give you insights into dyslexia. Let me introduce you to Mike Guest. Mike, it's great to have you here.
Thanks very much for having me on. I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, you know, let's get stuck into our questions. We want to kind of hear your dyslexia story, and then we'll hear where you are now and what you're up to, etc. So cast your mind back. You know, what was life like before you knew about dyslexia?
So I was in primary four. I don't actually know what age that potentially was.
For our international guests, that's about 8, 9 years old.
Yeah, so 8, 9 years old. And I don't really have much of a memory of my life, probably until the end of primary six or primary seven. What my memory is of my mum and dad's. Now, I guess my brain has kind of fused a lot of that out. But what I can tell you was that my mum used to have to literally drag me out of the car, kicking and screaming. And it broke her heart to do that every single day from primary one to primary four to a certain school that really did not deal with me well at all. And it was pretty horrific by all sounds. And I think it was pretty traumatic for my family at times as well, because I was so unhappy. I was so confused and I was so scared. And yeah, you know, it wasn't great by the sounds of it. And it looks like my brain has kind of deleted it, which I think maybe is a good thing.
And what was the wake up call for you and your parents with dyslexia then? What woke you up to it?
It was my mum. You know, I reckon Fiona is dyslexic as well. She's never been tested, but we've always kind of just guessed that. And she would tell me some stories of late of what her childhood was like. And she just clicked on and she thought, this kid is smart, but something's up. What's going on here? And she really clicked on really early. So in that sense, I was really lucky. So yeah, mum, you know, she's the one, mum and dad, but she really just, she knew something was right, but wasn't right.
And what does she do?
My mum was originally a nanny, and she worked with families all around the world. She just disappear off of them. They'd move to places like Egypt or Canada. And so she kind of hoboed around doing that. And so that was originally what she did. And then after that, she worked for Scottish Adoption, doing the fundraising for them. So she was kind of in charge with a team of people running that. And when not doing that, she is still famous for making cakes for everyone's birthdays. Which is like pretty much the Scottish cake queen, we call her.
Okay. So that's fascinating. What I was actually asking was, what did she do once she found out something was not quite right?
A classic, totally missing.
Typical dyslexic misinterpreting the question.
And totally went off on one. Brilliant. What she did was they then looked and went, right, we need to get him tested. And there was a wonderful woman called Katrina Collins, who has sadly passed away. I don't know if that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And Katrina worked at George Watson's. And somehow, mum and dad managed to get me to go and have an afternoon with her once a week. and it was heaven. It was like, I'm going to see this magic woman that totally gets me. And I think mum would do something terrible, like take me to McDonald's, which she's embarrassed about, and she'll be mortified that I've said that. But I would get a treat. I'd get like a wee cheeseburger and some fries. And I'd go and see this woman. And she said the difference in me, it was just the lights were on my eyes. There was a sparkle. I'd come back because someone was taking the time to engage with me and sort of help me understand what was going on in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, I just hear this so often on the podcast. The difference between those people who have kind of made it in some sort of form and those who have really been, you know, pushed under by dyslexia is, you know, often that one-to-one person who's come and at key moments and said, I'm going to help you with this. And they've had the insight to be able to do that. And it's often a tutor of some sort.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, she was the start. And then there was Sophie Dow, who runs Mindroom, who's also a family friend, met her. And then, you know, and she's still in my life to the point where I'm really excited to do something with her conference in 2023. We're going to do something together for that. You know, we still talk on and off. I'll see her. You know, she's just one of those people that's ever present in my life. And we reach out to each other when we have time or the universe aligns. And she really, you know, she's one of those people, along with a guy called Dave Wheel, who was the computing teacher at the school. Now, I walked out of school with a C in computing in higher and nothing else. I think some of those exams I turned up and probably put my name on the front of it and just thought, that's it. You know, I'm done. I'm not even going to put myself through the stress. But Dave saw something in me. He was teaching climbing in the after school kind of hours. I loved climbing. It was this thing where I could just be completely engrossed and anything else that was going on in the world was completely arbitrary because all I was doing was focusing on making my way up this fake wall. And Dave said to me, right, I believe in, you know, I didn't tell me at the time, but, you know, he believed in me and said, I'm going to teach you how to climb outdoors, lead climb with gear, traditional style, if you pull your finger out and you apply yourself, because I want to prove someone in a certain department wrong. And I know you do as well. And Dave tutored me and he also taught me how to climb. He showed me the outdoors. He showed me how to conquer my fear without me realizing it.
I'm going to make a guess that about how people were viewing you at the time, you know, like maybe I shouldn't, but you know, I'm going to guess that they probably thought you had a bad attitude and that you didn't care. And the reason why you weren't doing well at school was because you didn't really care about doing well at school and you didn't really care and you just had a bad attitude. Would that be about right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I definitely heard that. I remember looking over some of the old school reports and I actually want to do that with mum and dad. They kept some stuff. I think it'd be really interesting to dig into that because it's no longer traumatic. I think it will actually be quite funny to kind of look at that. And yeah, you know, Mike sat in a classroom to Mike when that bell goes and got out, two completely different humans.
Yeah.
Scared, confused, feeling marginalized, feeling guilty for taking up the teacher's time and the other people's time. Bell goes, Mike's out, fun, happy guy. Like, you know, I love having a laugh. You know, I am a big kid. I'm a total child. I actually have to control myself, you know, like in work situations where you're like, all right, calm down. You're getting paid at the moment. Let's not get too overexcited. But yeah, no, there was a lot of it was pretty traumatic. And a lot of people have gone through some horrendous stuff in their life. And, you know, sometimes I would give myself a hard time thinking I had a really hard time. You know, I've had a roof over my head. I've been very lucky in that sense. But whatever we're going through, you know, that's our trauma. That's our experience. And it can feel so overwhelming.
Yeah. So tell us more about Mindroom. How old were you when you met? Was it Sophie? Remind me of the name.
Yeah, Sophie Dow.
Oh, Sophie Dow.
How old was I? I can't quite remember. I'm going to have to try and remember that. But
in your teens?
Probably earlier.
Okay, right.
But by my teens, it's quite funny. I was like the dyslexic pin-up boy, mum called me as a joke, because there was this booklet done by Mindrum, and it was sponsored by the Royal Mail, she managed to get. And it was a booklet which was about dyslexia, ADHD, Asperger's, DAMP, which is a very rare thing that her daughter, now I think, I can't remember if I've got the acronyms right, always bad at that. And she, it was the first time I'd ever been to a photographic studio. And there was this, it is in fact the only photo of me with a kind of hairy face left. And my mum loves it. She's like, one day maybe he'll clip his beard again. but yeah, just that relationship with them has been ongoing. And I've always tried to dip in and work at how I can work with them. And I've been frustrated that I can't, you know, that I'm not present enough and all these kind of things. But that, I think, for me is all starting to come out, you know, that relationship. And Sophie is just unbelievable. Like, I'm in such admiration of the energy and the passion that she has had for people with learning differences. And she has two kids with learning differences as well. So she lives it. She is it, you know. It's brilliant. And those people, they're kind of my North Stars.
Fantastic. So I always ask people what the challenge was for you. I mean, we might make an assumption what the challenge was for you, but sometimes it's quite surprising, you know, what the actual challenge for you was. What would you say the main challenge has been for you with dyslexia?
That is a great question, isn't it? Because we are all so individual as humans. And then within dyslexia, it's just such a wide spectrum. So for me, quite simply, you know, imagine sitting in a room looking at a blackboard, someone writing potentially quite bad handwriting, and then I'm reading it, which is hard. It goes into my brain, flips round, I paste it down on the bit of paper, it's back to front. So, you know, there was one element. I would hear things, reverse it, loop it, change it in my head, write it down. It would just fall out of my head. You know, horrendous attention span, you know, bordering on complete lack of, for the things that ultimately didn't particularly interest me or were so confusing. So just fitting into that construct of what was or what is education, I just struggled. It just didn't work for me. I wanted to do things with my hands. I wanted it to be physical. I wanted it to be tactile. And it was all just sat there looking at words and letters, you know, dance around on the page at points.
Yeah. Okay. Got you. You know, interesting thing is only about 2% of people with dyslexia see words or letters moving on the page.
It's an interesting one, that, isn't it? And for me, it was like, it hasn't happened like it did back then.
Yeah.
But then there was this kind of glow for a while, this confusion, classic B and D reversal. Uh-huh. And then I had some of those like overlays. I never got the glasses, got some colored overlays, which helped a little bit. But then that is something that seems to have disappeared or changed.
Yeah. But dyslexia is still there.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't just affect reading and writing from blackboards or what you're listening to. It affects all sorts of other things. Have you heard of our dyslexia quiz?
No.
I've got a dyslexia quiz app, and I think it might be quite fun. It takes 5 minutes. You want me to talk you through it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see what score you get on the dyslexia quiz. I'll share my screen. Okay, and see if this works. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Oh, there we go. Works.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So it's in the app store, guys. Listening, just go to, it's only on Apple right now. Go to Apple, type in dyslexia quiz, or just dyslexia will be at the top, which is great. And then you click open, start the quiz. And I've designed this so it's friendly to dyslexia. So it reads the questions out to you with doodles, so you can just listen and watch if you want. Okay. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. Okay, 97, Mike, you've got one of the highest scores you can probably get. Indicates that your work is extremely impacted by dyslexia. And I would say you only said yes at sometimes and no to some of them because you've learned a few different skills
Correct.
in the meantime since you were young. I suspect if you did this when you were like 12 or 13, you'd nearly be at 100.
Oh yeah, I'm almost guarantee I would have been at 100. Yeah,
What did you think of the quiz?
that's cool, man. I love that. It's fun, and yeah, that's really interesting. I'm going to send that to a lot of people. In fact, that should somehow be on people's phone. Like, that should just be mandatory.
Yeah,
You know,
mandatory
like.
screening of your whole family. Granny, what's your quiz? And do you know what the amazing thing is, right? Okay, when you do that quiz, often you're like, yeah. But then you do it with your wife, your mom, your friend, whatever, and they're like, no. And you're like, what? How are you saying no to that? I mean, no to all of these? And they're like, they get like a five. And you're like, I just can't. And then often when you do this in front of someone,
Yeah.
your family, and you go through the quiz and you keep saying yes. And they're like, do you really find it hard to remember your habits in a day? Do you really find it hard with the back? Do you really right now? And you're like, yeah, isn't that normal? And it's
Yeah.
not normal. It's
Yeah.
not typical. It's rare. Anyway, so it's fascinating doing it with other people.
Oh man, that's fun. I'm gonna have lots of fun doing that with friends that I catch up with around the world that are dyslexics. You know, like I've been really lucky to travel a lot with work and personally. And one of the things that I love about that is new connections and conversations with people. And I swear there's an energy around dyslexics and people on that similar wavelength where after a certain while, I kind of look at someone and usually just blurt it out and like, are you dyslexic? They're like, how did you know? I'm like, you can tell, you
You
know, and it's
can,
like,
can't you? I mean,
yeah.
what do you think it is? What's your spider senses? What do you think your spider senses, your dyslexia radar is picking up?
Yeah, the dyslexic radar, there's like sometimes with people, it's this ability to have this stream of consciousness conversations, which just roll and roll and roll. And there never seems to be an end, and that's fine. The way that you see people deal with the way that you see people interact in social situations, react to stress, react to problem solving. And there's just this like often, and especially with people that maybe have got a grasp of it, there's an energy from them. And I don't know what I mean by the energy, there's a vibe. And then for the people that maybe don't know that they are, or haven't accepted it, or have a deep built shame about it that can also come out. And also some people that I end up having quite an abrasive first relationship with, it's like, well, wow, you're spiky. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute, you're a bit like me. I get this. You know, it's interesting. And I've not been able to quantify it as yet, but as I become a bit more aware of myself, my triggers, my actions, my reasons for doing things, I can start looking at other people compassionately and think, ah, that's interesting. What's that about? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing this?
Well, one of the reasons why I like to do these podcasts is to, it's really, it's not just hearing people's stories, it's hearing how people have navigated dyslexia in their life. So you've had these challenges, and what I'm fascinated by is, Mike, could you just kind of share a little bit about how you navigated your way out from school into where you are now? And because a lot of people listening might be thinking, you know, I mean, let's face it, people with dyslexia don't follow straight paths on the whole. You know, there's not necessarily a straight path, a career path. You know, even if we end up in a typical career as a lawyer or whatever, you can guaranteed that they had some convoluted moment in it. There'll be gaps in their CV, you know, and that need to be explained, etc. Why is there this 3-year gap here? And it's a moment where they went on a convoluted route to find maybe that the path they were on was the right one, or maybe a better path, and they came across it. And it's very interesting just to explore these, how people navigate the challenge they had to find the advantages they have. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Wow, that is really interesting and is something that I've been thinking about. It's like, how the hell did I get to this point here? And it's quite fun to kind of look back. So,
well, describe what this point here is in the journey. So we've got a picture of where you were, school, you know, etc. And then let's paint the picture of the destination and show us the navigable, the journey of the navigation.
Yeah. So, you know, now.
Where are you now?
Where am I now? I'm 40 years old. I'm self-employed and have been self-employed for the whole of my working life, which is probably about 21 years. I've never held down a full-time job because I've never even tried, because it never even looked like an option, and it scared the living daylight out of me. To have my own schedule is really important to me, or have as much control of that as I can is really important. And how have I navigated this? You know, I'm really...
Could you just describe to people, you make, just forgive me, Mike, it's like, you know, talk a bit about the photography, about what you actually doing and the lifestyle, maybe over the last 2-3 years, just to give people a flavor of it.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, things started to solidify as a photographer. I was doing a really wide mix of things. So everything from Scottish folk music videos or album covers or photos for people's press or Instagrams, to doing press trips for the likes of Glenmorangie and Ardbeg, where I would turn up. There's 10 people. They could be from everywhere from Russia to China, and they're there to taste whiskey and write a blog or a vlog or a magazine article. And I'm just there to document that internally. Fast forward the next week, I'm jumping on a plane or getting in a truck, and I'm going to work for Patagonia, the outdoor brand. And I'm working as a photographer and part of the team where we tootle around the Alps or the UK with a tiny home, one of these little kind of like a shed on wheels, and going fixing people's clothing. And so I'm there to interact with people, to pull out a story, to pull a photo out, and to see if they're up for talking to me about their journey and why they love this product. You know, fast forward again, I'm in Ireland on tour with a band, and we're sitting around a fire. It's 12 o'clock at night. You know, it's on a farm. It's this barn that we've been in or something. Again, fast forward 24 hours, I'm on a plane going to San Francisco to work and do some random conference video that I'm getting flown around the world for 2 days. I turn up, I smell of smoke and fire. I'm walking into the hotel room, having been picked up by the VIP shuttle, which was definitely a bad idea. And the production manager's just looking at me thinking, I should know that. And I'm looking at him going, you know me. You know, it's bizarre. And I don't say those to boast these things. It's like the way I've done things have been, there is nothing linear. There is no path. It's like a messy ocean some days. And then some days it's perfectly calm and clear. And I relate a lot of my life now that I'm really into surfing and into water to do with the ocean and the changing tides and the swells and the wind. You know, it's there's just nothing linear about it. And I love that. I'm proud of that now. I'm proud of that for myself.
You know, we're going to hold that thought of us navigating to that destination. Thanks for sharing that, Mike. But let's just take a little detour into the sea for a moment. You know, like I think I don't know what it is, but I love the sea as well. I'm a sailor. I like sailing dinghies. On the west coast of Scotland, and I kind of do it to an extreme level sometimes. My next ambition is to sail in an open boat from the north of Ireland over to Iona on the west coast, going around the Atlantic side of Isla, Jura, Colonsay, and so on, and land on Iona, in the spirit of Colum Kyll, St. Columba, who did that in a leather clad coracle, which is a basically an open boat, a very thin wooden. For those of you who are listening, it's like a basket, big basket, woven basket of slats of wood, and then you skin it with leather, and then you pull up your sail and you know, sail places. And these guys even managed to get over to America before Columbus did. St. Brendan managed to do it, the Brendan voyage. It's an incredible story. He did it 500 years before others, and no one believed it. They thought it was just a myth until someone recreated it and did it anyway. As an aside, this fascination with water and the sea and so forth, I have a hunch that there's something we are so natural at being in, this limbo state all the time, this dynamic fluid state, that we're just not, most people are used to, you know, having routines, following processes, you know, following systems, having habits for things, etc. And maybe 5% of their life is, you know, a variable, you know, or adapts. Whereas it's the other way around for us. You know, we've maybe got 10% of our life as a fixed point, but the rest is so fluid and adaptable. And when we meet the sea, we meet a fellow, you know, our natural state, which is nearly 100% dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you touch on that, because that is a huge part. And I mean, there is so much science behind all of it now, but let's take it to a really kind of primal level for me, in a sense. I don't know if primal is the right word, but when I'm looking at the ocean, when I'm in the ocean, when I'm on it, when I'm surfing in it, swimming in it, whether I'm bobbing in my camera, or whether I'm actually even floating in a bath,
yeah,
there is something about being encapsulated by a body of water, visually, physically, touch, smell, taste, all of it. For me, I think it helps me to slow down. It helps me to connect to myself and just absorb and watch all these minute, microscopical, or like little things. Like I can zoom in really macro and just fascinate on like a little ripple, or I can look out, open my eyes, or depending what lens I'm using, if I'm in there with the camera, and just absorb this whole environment as the sea and the earth meet and merge. It's just captivating. It's overwhelming, but it's not at the same time. It can be like this amazing sense of awe, but then just this sense of calm. And there's a brilliant book by a gentleman called Dr. Jay Wallace called Blue Mind. And he really did a deep dive into this. And he talks about red mind and blue mind. That red mind is that anxious, stressed kind of state. And that blue mind is what we get when we are beside that body of water. We find this sense of calm. And I've also started to relate my emotions and my feelings towards the fact that things like the tide pushes and pulls every day. It's linked to the moon. And sometimes we've got small tides and sometimes we've got big tides. It's the same with the sun. The sun rises every single day. The globe spins, the sun spins, we move around, and it changes by small increments. On a cloudy day, that sun is still up there. And if I tap into that thought when I'm having a darker or harder day and I'm stressed, sun's still doing its thing, the tide's still doing its thing. I just need to keep doing my thing. Tomorrow's a better day. Another hour might be a better day. In a minute, things might change. And the same with the ocean. It can change so quickly. Weather can change, whether we're in the mountains or the ocean. And you got to be ready for that. And I've only started scratching the surface. I've only surfed for 10 years. I've only really done water photography, or, you know, ocean imagery, I think I would like to probably think of it as, for the last 4 or 5 years. And where my mind goes, like you can see, there's this whiteboard of ideas and potential that I see within where I can go personally, and then ultimately professionally with water.
I think maybe this is the core metaphor and theme for this whole podcast is how dyslexia and water, you know, relate, and how you can understand a lot of dyslexia like water and see, basically see the sea, dyslexia and the sea. Mm. I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot myself personally. I mean, I remember the first moment where I bought a boat, and I bought a little dinghy on eBay, and I wheeled it down onto the shore, and I was going to just take the oars and row it a little bit, because I used to do that when I was a kid, a little mirror dinghy. And then I thought to myself, maybe I'll put the sails up and give the sailing thing a bash. Never realized how complex sailing is. And so I came back with a friend, and we were saying, right, let's go sailing. And then the weather was terrible. And we were like, but I've just scheduled the sailing time right now. You know, I'm going to be sailing from 1 p.m. till 4 p.m. today. And I look at the weather, and the weather goes, no, you're not. And then it was just like, I wanted to have an argument with the weather.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, you know, I've just been working really hard all week. I've been looking forward to this. This is my treat. And, you know, I'm whinging, I'm whining, I'm arguing all inside of my head. I can feel all that emotion and so on. And then I'm kind of like, just give me a break here and let me go sailing. I'm going to go sailing. And this other voice beside me is going, mate, if you go sailing in that, you're in real trouble. Like, it's 4-7. And, you know, there's white horses everywhere. It's just, and I'm like, no, we can give this a bash. I did. I went out and I got a good whipping. And there's something just so helpful about the immediate feedback of nature in its raw when you meet it in the ocean. And you cannot argue with it. You cannot negotiate with it. You have to learn to move with it, not against it. You have to, you can't change the wind, but you can change the tack of your sails. You have to learn to become adaptable. And once I did that, it tapped into something so core in me that, and then I found I was so natural at it. And I could start reading the wind. I could start winning sailing competitions and things like that, just because it was just natural to me to be in a dynamic situation.
Yeah, I think it also forces you to be incredibly present.
Yes.
And acutely aware of what's going on around you.
Yes.
And allows you to disconnect from everything else, the noise that surrounds our lives, whether it's digitally, whether it's emotions, whether it's thoughts, whether it's stress. I think something like climbing is probably very interesting like that. And as we talk, and I talk about Dave and the help he gave me, I start to think, for many reasons I was probably into it, but probably one of the biggest reasons potentially is because I can't think of anything else.
Yes.
Or I've got no worries.
Yes.
I'm in the zone, I'm in the moment, I'm being present, whatever word or thing you want to use. And if there's something that I've learned in the last couple of years with some of the mental health struggles that I've had, and to contextualize that, you know, just really life felt like it fell apart for so many of us around the world last year, but I was already on a collision course of just this perpetual motion machine that I am, and I was not stopping, not moving. And you know, I literally just hit this wall, and water and learning to be present in that has really helped me. Now,
fascinating.
I don't also need to do it every day. So, but being the kind of person I am, I'm incredibly fanatical about things, you know. So yeah. I did last May go out every single morning, and to the point where it was like 3:45 and I'm waking up and I'm going out. You know, and this all was born through a conversation with my friend Nick down in Cornwall. And he said, man, I'm struggling. I'm really, really struggling. I'm going to swim out every day with the water housing camera, take some photos. I was like, Nick, I need that. You know, at this point, as all of us, many of us were doing some good day drinking and not feeling great about life. And I, you know, a couple of days later, I woke up and thought, I'm on it. I'm going to get out there. And I did this, you know, obsessively, but I made this committed action that I was going to do this thing and started creating this art that it feels like to me now, these 1 minute slow motion loops with music that people that couldn't get to the ocean could resonate with and enjoy, because it was working for me. So why wouldn't it work for other people? And could I divert people from this horrendous scrolling that we do on these devices, which help us immeasurably, but ultimately I feel like, and I'm not the only person to say this, you know, and I don't know much about it, but starting to make us a bit stupid. You know, I feel like too much device time is negative. And so, but the other thing I realized was when I was talking to, I'm going to call her my friend, Jana, that I work with, a counselor, she was sort of explaining to me the human fascination with intoxication. Now, it could be anything, substances, devices, routine, lack of routine, this obsession. Like, how do you then find this thing that you love, the ocean, this imagery, this creating, this work, but how can I step out of that and go, I don't need to do that every day, because in the real world, I can't go into the water every morning. And even if I could, do I want to? How can I learn the lessons from being in there and tap into that with the use of one breath, or grabbing a balloon in my pocket, or thinking about the ocean? That's where the evolution for me at the moment is. And I think that dyslexic brain takes me to this point where I'm going. And so for anyone that out there that's a surfer or not, there's this thing in surfing called trim, the art of trim. And when a wave's breaking and you're looking at it, and there's that white water at one end and this clean wall, perfect, immaculate potential and energy as I see it. When you're on a certain type of surfboard, generally bigger, you just find this point where you're just in the high point of the wave and you're trimming. You kind of feel like you're floating, you know, you're flying. And there's this point of trimming. And the thing I'm learning at the moment is I'm at that point, but the wave isn't endless. The wave will end at some point. And it's better to not fly off the end of it and catapult into the rocks. Maybe I need to stop, look around, think what's going on, and pivot about what I'm thinking or where I'm going with my art, with my work, with my life, with my thoughts. And that's like, I know it's a bit kind of a roundabout way to go about it, but for me, it just makes sense. And it's like when you're really, everything's feeling right and fantastic, it's not about stopping, but it's about building an awareness around yourself and what's going on, to look about and go, is there a right-hand turn? Is there a left? Do we keep going straight? Everything cool? Everything's cool. You know, it's, I don't know if that's making any sense, but.
Well, it does, because I think if we go back to our first question was, how did you navigate from where you were to where you are now? I get the sense that there was a time where you were navigating and doing the same sort of surfing through life more unconsciously, and now you've become more conscious of it and better at doing it. I think that's one of the advantages and disadvantages of dyslexia, is that we have a propensity to constantly improvise, which is a huge disadvantage sometimes if you've got an established system or process at school or work or whatever that works well, and you're constantly improvising all the time, wasting all of this extra energy trying to find a better way, or just not remembering the way that you know works, but you can't remember it. So you just make it up as you go along. And so that's a huge cost, a huge disadvantage. But then in certain circumstances, like something that's new and dynamic and there isn't a right way or an established path, it becomes a huge advantage. And then if you develop that advantage, it becomes a superpower. But, you know, tell us a little bit about your journey then, from where you were at school to where you are now, and how you surfed that.
Yeah, I mean, leaving school, I think mum and dad had gone away on holiday. The next door neighbors were maybe looking after me. And it was like sixth year, just the start of. And I think I just walked into school one day. I was like, I'm done. I need to book a meeting with the headmaster. like, what do you want to talk about? I was like,
I did the same meeting with my headmaster in sixth year.
Amazing. And I sat down and I was like, look, let's be honest. This isn't exactly working out, is it? And I don't exactly remember the conversation. And he said, look, Mike, you know, we do love having you here, but you're already doing less hires than anyone else. Yes, you're taking tours around the school and showing people how wonderful it is and come here when you literally want to run. I was like, yeah, you help out with some computing class. You help out with PE. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really helpful, am I? And he's like, yeah, but kind of need to be doing some of this schoolwork stuff. And I was like, yeah, there's the crux, isn't it? Here's the problem. Don't want to, not into it. And I said, look, I'm
what school was it? If out of interest.
I managed to get into George Watson's.
Oh, you were in Watson's. Okay.
Yeah. Like, so I was really lucky in that sense that I was able to go there, and that Katrina Collins ultimately had found me this space.
Fantastic.
Because they had an amazing, and yeah, still do have an amazing dyslexic department. So that was the, from primary four on, until 6 year.
Okay. For those of you who are listening, George Watson's is a very well-respected school in Edinburgh, private school. It is a private school, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, really great school. And it's got a good reputation for, you know, helping people with learning difficulties as well.
Yeah. And so I think I was just like, yeah, I'm done. He's like, have you spoke to your parents about this? I was like, oh, they're on holidays. Like, yeah, all right. Wait until they're back, you know. They called, I'm leaving school. Oh, are you? Right, let's talk about this in a week. Came back and they're like, fine. But you walk out that door, you start working straight away. And I randomly ended up finding a job in the catering company that were using the rugby club's kitchens.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, perfect.
This is just across the road from George Watson's. I used to be a primary school teacher at the Steiner School, which is just around the corner from them.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. So I was like, cool. So wait, I can leave school, work right beside it, can see my pals at lunch or in the morning. I was like, this is ideal. And I walked into that place the first day. You know, my mum had kind of trained me up as a bit of a cook. Randomly as a kid, digression here, I ended up on Junior MasterChef, kind of getting through to the national finals.
No way.
Because I love cooking. My mum, my happy place. Gee, this is an interesting explanation. My happy place was being sat by the stove with mum, cooking me something healthy and feeding me. There was the warmth of the stove and there was the warmth of the love from my mum and the food in my mouth, like watch her doing things. It was just like, I just sat there. There's this great photo of me with a pair of shorts and my shirt off, totally massive, messy hair, just happy. And she was like, that is literally your happy place. And food still is a massive comfort for me in a sense of, it slows me down when I cook it. I love to cook for people because I love to feed people something healthy and wholesome. So I left school, but oh my God, you know, it was like up at 4 a.m., get in there, work your ass off until 12, couple hours off, back in, cook. Oh, right, get your chefing weights off. You're going to waiter. Oh my God. You know, work till 11. I walked out of school and I worked my arse off. And it was great. You know, it was fantastic. And it really gave me a very strong work ethic where, you know, if you knuckle down, you can do it. And I was happy.
You know, was it the first time in your life where you did hard work and you got results?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was terrifying sometimes because people are telling you stuff. You're like, oh my God, how am I going to remember? Oh God. But it was like, do this, make that, chop that, done. It, you know, I joke now where sometimes when it's like, you know, the creative realm is always changes. You're never done. The internal critic, the client, yeah, just overwhelming. You never feel you're done. And sometimes it's like, can I just dig a hole? I don't want any fence posts made. Like,
yes. You know, interestingly, Churchill was dyslexic. Winston Churchill was dyslexic. And you should see his report cards, you know, should try harder, all that sort of thing. And he had mental health problems. And one of the things that he had to do every day was lay bricks.
Wow.
So while he was prime minister in the war, he would go out the back of Downing Street, the equivalent of the White House, open the door into the garden, and he'd have a pile of bricks, and he'd mix water and sand, and then he would lay a pile, he would lay about three courses of bricks, and then he would push it over, and someone would clean it up, pile the bricks back up, and then the next morning he would lay another three courses of bricks, and he'd do that every single day. And the reason why was that that manual labor, he realized he needed to do something physical like that that got him into a headspace, which stopped him spiraling into a depression.
That's so interesting. And I think you've touched on something that a lot of people are touching on and working on, it. And what I scratched on with Dawn Days for myself, like this, for the people listening, what we ended up giving this thing a name with my friend Nick, who came up with the idea, was Dawn Days. It's a committed action in the morning for yourself. It's something, it's just this thing that you're doing. And I think...
Just to be clear to those who are listening, Dawn Days is Mike's latest thing at the moment, which is really having an impact, where like Mike decided to wake up in the morning and do an intentional time every morning and take photography of that dawn moment. You've actually helped other people start to do the same thing, and you've given it a name, Dawn Days. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess give you the quick elevator pitch, as they call it, about it. Is that, so it started as the pandemic hit last year in February. I was away on tour. Patagonia pulled the pin and we were sent home. 74 hours later, multiple countries, miles and no sleep. I'm outside my flat, right? I'm home. And you know, there's a lot more to it, but ultimately I would go out every morning, take photos, and then I started filming. And then I started collaborating with musicians using sound effects by my friend Barry, who lives like 100 meters away from me. He was going down and recording at different times. And I was pulling all this stuff together and creating these 1 minute to 5 minute loops. Or sometimes they were little funny edits, and sometimes it was just one single shot repeated or reversed of a piece of water moving. And I was putting it online. I was putting it on Instagram. I was putting it on my website and on a Vimeo. So if people want to be off social media, they could absorb it there. And people were reaching out to me from New Zealand to Australia to China, Japan, actually now, like it's all over the place. And I'm not saying I went viral, but it got an amazing bit of traction. And people went, I can't get to the sea right now. I just feel like I'm there with you. And the way I film and the way I do it is quite conducive to, one, the lack of light, the kind of murky water that we have in Portobello. It's not exactly that clean. It's getting better. And it was this half in, half out, but not the classic split line where you can see absolute clarity below and pin sharp up top. You know, I love that mix of something incredibly sharp in the frame, but the rest of it's fuzzy and out of focus. And as we talk, I kind of think that's that thing of like, the sharp element is the presence of being in the moment, and the fuzziness is everything in the front and everything in the back, because there's no point worrying about either of those. And we created this thing between me and Nick, just going back and forth between each other, and the connections were amazing to people, you know, the words and the positivity that it created. Fast forward a year and we got to New Year, and I remember sending a text to Nick. It was almost like simultaneous. We were like, I'm thinking, what are you thinking? We're going into another lockdown. Let's do it. So we swam it again. And then we've had anywhere in the region of 50 to 60 people from Shetland all the way down to Cornwall going in and doing the same thing for their own reasons. And everyone has a different reason. There's no rules to it. I don't own it. Nick doesn't own it. You know, there's just this positivity that is definitely spurred from it. And it's allowed people that had really regimented ideas about their creativity and their water photography, and it's let them explore and try new things. You know, that the conversations I have had with some men, especially, you know, this has become quite a mental health related thing where people open up. So to add context, this for all of you, is that I would also write something below. I'm dyslexic, but I like to prove the fact. What do I like to prove? I am dyslexic, but I've got a really good command of the English language and I can write really well. Generally, it's a massive paragraph.
Yes.
Full stops are an interesting concept. Commas, I'm learning. That's about it. You know, but with the use of things like Grammarly,
yeah,
which is an amazing app, which has really transformed my life. I must say, before that, my Grammarly is my dad and a number of people that I will just spray out help. Can you edit this for me? When do you need it? No. You know, and so I would write these things about my emotions and my feelings and how I was relating it to the water or what was going on in my life, and not trying to tell people what to do, just kind of unconsciously was telling my story and had decided if I was going to be on these mediums and these platforms, like no longer was there going to be this varnished brush of life. Like, I'm just going to be honest. This is who I am. This is what's worked for me. Like, if you're into it, you're into it. If you're not, you're not.
So if you're listening, the links to all of this will be in the show notes. Just swipe up on whatever you're listening to right now. Just swipe up and you'll see some text, and then there'll be hyperlinks to Mike's website, Vimeo, Instagram, anything else that we've been talking about here. There'll be a whole range of links there so that you can jump straight to it from here. You can even jump and click through while you're listening if you're not driving or whatever else. So Mike, let's get back to our track, which is Love These Diversions, and it's all part of the whole dyslexia and the sea theme that's going on here in this podcast.
But let's shepherd this situation back.
So we left when you were at rugby doing the chefing, and that's your first moment of, you know, really grafting and seeing results and so on. We've been talking about the other sort of 2-3 years on the other side, and how have you navigated? You started doing events, you started going to skiing and all sorts of stuff, and just give us a quick overview of how that time and this and now connected.
Yeah, so I then saved up, bought a ticket to Australia, and managed to get a job in a school as an outdoor education assistant, and was randomly taking Australian kids out into the Aussie bush whilst I was working out what the hell a brown snake is and is everything going to kill me. Living in a tent Monday to Friday with a lovely crew of people. You know, did that for 6 months. Amazing experience. I mean, God, I could wax lyrical about that for ages, but it was just this brilliant experience where I just put myself out there, worked my ass off again, did cooking, did all sorts of bits, and ended up, I ended up in Philadelphia randomly working for my aunt who ran the world's largest indoor flower show, you know, because I'd already had a bit of a event knowledge. So I just worked on the crew, helping them out. And the next thing, I'm back home. All right, here we go. What's going on? Technical theater college. Oh, that sounds fun. I've done a bit of events. I find myself at college. Oh God, education. Oh no, bits of paper. Oh no, words. Freak out. What am I doing? I got out of this. And one of the college lecturers, Rob, was great. He kind of looked at me and was like, theater's not really for you, Mike, is it? I was like, well, Rob, I think it's this education thing, isn't it? He went, yeah, look, handed me a post-it note, 5 numbers. Tell them if they want a reference, give me a call. Just get out, man. Go work. And I basically went to a company called Tower Productions and offered my services for a 3 day's work, which, you know, no one says no to, especially Tim. And, you know, the next thing I found myself, I'm sitting in a warehouse packing lights, wiring cables, you know, pushing flight cases into vans, just kind of as a warehouse monkey, really. And, you know, someone turns up ill, that gets busy. Oh, you're out on site. Go and help them. Go drive a van there. Go down to this. Fast forward 12 years, you know, you've gone and done everything from rock and roll gigs to weddings, bar mitzvahs. I don't know if I ever did a bar mitzvah, but, you know, literally everything. And I loved it because it was tactile. It was problem solving. It was thinking on your feet. It was like big kids meccano, plug and play. Blue thing goes to blue thing. Don't put too many red things on the blue thing, otherwise that thing will blow up. You know, there was a lot of mass involved, but there was a lot of people that could help that. Great teams. You found your position. You know, I was the guy that did the climbing and rigging because I like doing that. I was a skinny little monkey. Put him up there to do that. And I loved it for years and years and years. And I was so busy doing it. And at times you'd be totally dead and you'd wonder what's going on. But I just got to this point where I was ultimately bored, and a friend of mine, Mungo, I can't remember where we were, if we were in the pub after a job, and he just went, I love having you around. And you're not the best technician, but I do love having you back. You're great crack. He's like, you're just not into this anymore, are you? I was like, nah, I'm done. He's like, well, what are you going to do? And it would be like, I think we were on a roadshow for someone random, like Prudential, you know, sat there pushing buttons on a laptop when there is a, you know, there's a machine that does that, but you're there to be paid, you know, pay attention. I just thought, what am I doing with my life? And it was great, you know, I'm really lucky. And I would be like squirreling food away from the breakfast bar because I didn't want to pay in the supermarket because I was saving to go up and do my winters. So all the way through this, I would get to a certain point and then attention span stops. I want to ski. I want to get, you know, I want to go and do that. So I would pack up the car, drive out to the Alps, get a job chopping veggies in a hotel, work 4 days a week, you know, ski, chop veggies, drink beer, have fun, meet people, you know, and I got really lucky to meet some amazing friends that are lifelong friends from that and get to ski to an incredibly high level with some world-class athletes. I was never at that level, but just there's, you know, it's that freckly loudmouth hanging out. Come on, let's go. You know, and so life went like that for ages until that point where I just thought, I'm done. My sister's lived in New Zealand, her 21 years or something. She just threw a lifeline and said, hey, you want to come and live with me? I'll try and help you get a job, waxing skis. That's what everyone does. They all start at this place with Schaefer and Diana. You know, it's like the passport. Come be a bum over here. And I did that in the evenings, wax skis, went ski touring, met pals, you know, just got made to feel like a family member. Like, you know, it's like, oh, it's Guesty. It's Joey's wee bro. No worries. And I did that, had some injuries, came back home. And then there was this thing where it was like, I met this guy, Ross, who is still just like a brother from another mother. I still talk to him on a weekly basis, sometimes not. And we started filming my sister's events, doing photos for it. And I thought, wow, this is awesome. I could totally do this, you know? And I'd done photography in school a bit. I'd worked in dark rooms at school. And I just came back with this zest. Did a bit of event stuff, but people knew I wasn't that into it. And I finally just pulled the pin and went, nah, that's it. However this is going to work out, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it as a photographer or whatever. And I have been on an equally rambling, bizarre journey to the present day of bobbing around in the water, sometimes getting paid to do that. You know, that's doing water cinematography for documentaries, or allowing my images to be used on music videos, or shooting music videos, or people writing poetry to the Dawn Days images. You know, it's so funny. I hear myself talking and it's so funny. I love that meandering road.
Yeah.
I love that. And yeah, if you're out there and you're worried about that, and you have any, if you have any anxieties related to worrying that you're not on this straight path, don't worry. You know, easy for me to say, but it's okay to take diversions. It's okay to completely spin and change what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. So you've got like the ultimate gap in your CV, just like a 20-year gap in your CV. So
totally.
You know, like if someone sat you down and said, okay, right, let's look at your CV, you know. So I'm not as dyslexic as you are. I'm more moderately dyslexic. I'd get like an 85 or something in that quiz, you know. Sometimes I wish I was more dyslexic, actually. And you've kind of, when I think often when you find folk with your kind of profile of mind, you know, you're so much out surfing the edge of that wave all the time. And it's, whether it's metaphorically speaking or in reality, just fascinating hearing your story. Now, there's tons of other questions I normally ask, like, do you mind map? What's mind mapping been as part of your journey, out of interest?
I do. And I've had a lapse. You know, my name's Mike Guess and I'm not mind mapping, and I wish I was. It's like, you know, I need to get back to it, randomly doing a lot of lists, and they don't really work. Well, lists do work, but the mind map is amazing. It's just like, boom. Because sometimes I imagine myself, I don't imagine myself as Keanu Reeves, right? But I imagine myself in a matrix. Or when people ask you how you think, it's like, it's just this 360 degree kind of realm of thoughts. Like,
yeah,
you want to jump inside my mind.
It is like the matrix. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty wild place.
Yeah.
There's things fly at you and you're like, it's coming at me. Can't get out of the way. We're going to have to grab onto this one, you know? And it's, I think it can be stressful and overwhelming for people around me if they don't know. And if I haven't set the expectation, you know, like I've got an assistant that I've taken on, Millie, who, you know, at first, I think I would have felt really anxious about saying I've got an assistant because it would sound a bit pretentious. But like Millie said, she's like, it's okay for busy people with brains like yours to have assistants, Mike. I was like, thank you for justifying your job. You know, probably sometimes Millie feels like I'm throwing things at a wall and she's at the wall and she's trying to catch these things. You know, messages will come via Instagram. I'll screen grab something and send it on WhatsApp. I'll send an email. I'll send her voice messages. And it's like, how are you coping? She's like, it's all good. You know, and I've set that expectation with her. I'm like, this is what I'm like. Now, if it's ever too much or things are not working, just tell me. You're not here to just accept what I throw at you. And I mean throwing things very compassionately. Like, she's amazing. We grew up next door neighbors. You know, her mum was my art teacher. I remember when she was born and they came home. You know, and she's just this awesome kid. She's not a kid. She's a young woman who studied art. She's been living in Oz for a little bit, came back. And having this concept of this person to help you organize your thoughts.
Yeah.
To organize me, to have access to my calendar, to remind me of stuff. And like, you know, telling her it's okay to bug me.
Yeah.
I'm literally paying you to digitally kick me in the ass.
Yes, brilliant. That's fantastic. I love it, Mike. That's fantastic. I have the same. I actually have more than one personal assistant digitally kicking me in the ass. I actually, you know, because I run a company called Bullet Map Academy, and it's now 7 staff like that doing different roles. And actually, what we've started to do is do coaches for kids, but we found online, but we found that actually the parents want it. And what the parents are doing is they're coming for like a half hour check-in, an hour check-in a day. And they're like, just help me get my head around this. I need to talk to someone. Let's structure it. Let's bullet map it. Let's organize it. And they're like, boom, got it done. Fantastic. I'm set. And you know, the fascinating thing is, I spoke to someone who runs a charity, and she was telling me, gosh, I've been listening to your podcast, Darius, and I've just realized that it takes me 3 days to do a funding application. And I'm like, well, that sounds quite quick, actually, you know. Yeah. It took me 3 weeks to get round to it and then actually do it.
So I've still never completed one.
Yeah. And I'm like,
daylight's out of me.
Paperwork. I'm terrified. Anyway, and so thank God I've got such a great wife. And now a great team. But to the point, 3 days it takes to do a funding application. I said, and she said, it's quicker when I sit down with a colleague. And I'm like, okay, quicker. How much quicker? She said, an hour. And I'm like, what, an hour to tell your colleague what to do with the general information? No, between the two of us, we've started and we finished the funding application in an hour. Oh my goodness me. Because she's sitting with one person who is doing all the clicking and the moving and the shuffling around and so on, she can keep in the zone, she can keep focused, and she's like, there's this, go get that, we need to get this, remember, we need to put that in. And so she can stay in the zone without being pulled out of it by admin.
Yeah.
And she gets it done in an hour. That's her genius. And so, and I was speaking to an 8-year-old kid the other day, part of our Bullet Map Academy. We're doing a celebration. And he said, Darius, I want to tell you about my YouTube video. So he started his YouTube channel. Shout out for Stephen Fitzsimmons. Link in the description. Go join his channel. Give him a little boost. I think he's probably only got about... Well, anyway, give him a boost. Anyway, Stephen, I said to Stephen, so it's about Minecraft. He said, well, I tried 16 times to record this video. And then I did a bullet map. And then I managed to map it. I managed to do the video straight after. And I was like, oh, that's great. So tell me. And it leads to your point is I should be mapping more. And I'm a, so little Stephen, I asked him, how long did it take you to do these 16 attempts? And he said, well, I tried once every day and sometimes twice every day. So he's spending about 10, 15 minutes each day trying to get this video, and he's got a stutter. And he says, oh, the stutter just got in the way, and I found it really hard, and it was painful for people to listen to, and it wouldn't work, and so on. And then after the 16 attempts over a couple of weeks, he then says he does a map. And I said, how long did it take you to do the map? 10 minutes. How long did it take you to record the video when you talked through the map? 3 minutes.
It's just brilliant, isn't it? I love the sound of this, and I want to talk to you about that more down the line, because I'd love to get involved with something like that. It's, you learn so much speaking to an 8-year-old kid with dyslexia as you would to a 40-year-old. Like,
yeah.
You learn, you can never not learn something. Yeah. I think when two dyslexics talk about their journey.
Yes.
I was just thinking as you were speaking there.
Well, let me just quickly summarize where we're at, guys. So Mike's been telling us about, you know, obviously Mike's extremely dyslexic. You know, you're off the chart dyslexic by the sounds of it. You're like a dyslexia pro. I'm an amateur dyslexic, you know, I'm moderately dyslexic. And there's a dynamic, responsive way of dealing with the world that you found so in tune with water, the ocean, the fluidity of it, surfing, even skiing, you know, it's another way of surfing water. It's just more solid.
Yeah.
You know, this common theme of water and the ocean and the dynamic of it, and you've kind of seen it within your career flow as well, you know, surfing it over the last 20 years. And now you're at the point where you're kind of doing it a little bit more consciously. You know, and I keep saying to folk, I'm old enough to know better and young enough to do something about it. Well, I started saying that when I was 40, and I'm still saying it now when I'm 50. I hope I'm still young enough to do it when I'm 70, sort of thing. But you seem to be in that kind of phase where you're kind of more intentionally tapping into your dyslexia, accepting it, and being a little bit more deliberate and sort of dialing down on some of the disadvantages and scaling up on the advantages. So could you just talk a little bit about where you are kind of going in the future with your, and tie it into your dyslexia, and just to wrap things up?
Yeah, no, brilliantly put. I think where I'm at the moment is, like you say, as we grow older, and I've never been one for numbers in ages. I've had friends from, you know, 60 to 70 to 80 to 20 to 10-year-old, you know. But something happened, and it was that mixture of things that's happened with the pandemic, with the struggles I had in my head, and just constantly feeling like I was on the run and not knowing what I was running from. And maybe as we talk now, I'm thinking about, I was running from my dyslexia. I was running from all of it. I just had to keep going, because you never know when it's going to end, because you've not got anything to fall back on, because you're just constantly learning and going and moving. And I think I have learned to slow down. I still have the pace and energy. I can still work for weeks on end without a break, but I'm aware of when I need to stop, when I need to slow down, and when I need to ask for help. And from quite a young age, my mum said I was quite good at that. Mum and dad said I was as good at asking, but the better I get at asking for help, the better I get at like laying the expectations of what it's going to be like to work with me or to be around me. Like, without saying, like, who was it said it to me? They picked up this Mindroom leaflet, which is this fantastic pamphlet that we talked about earlier. And they were like, oh, it's kind of like your user manual, isn't it? I was like, that's a brilliant way to put it. And I was like, yeah. They're like, it's pretty helpful to know these things, Michael.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Link in the description if we can find it.
Yeah, the PDF still exists, I believe. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So how can I do that so that people understand who I am, what I am, and how to get the best out of me? how to maximize my creativity, my attention, my just me.
Contribution. You
know, like my contribution. And
to the team, to the, the group.
And that's what I'm starting to learn. Like, will I be a photographer in 10 years? Who knows? Will I be a photographer in 5 years? Who knows? I'm no longer worried about that. Like, I'm finding a new direction, but I'm learning to watch out for those things that pop up. And I think, oh, I'm off. I'm in, feet first. You know, stop, look a bit more considered at things and decide where I'm going. I don't get it right every time. I still dive into things and think, oh my God, how did I get here? But yeah, I guess just like developing a consciousness around it and a love for my dyslexia. Like, I am proud to be dyslexic. I see it as a superpower. Someone said that to me. I don't know if we talked about that earlier, but when I was young, and I never know who said this to me, they said, hey, and I think it was one of the 6 years when I was young in school, we had this place called The Cabin, which was cool. It was like, it wasn't the learning support center. It was The Cabin. It was this place we could all go and you could hang out with first years to 6 years. And they're like, look, wee man, just remember you got a superpower. It's going to take a while to work it out, but you'll get there. It's not a difficulty. I mean, it was called a disability when I was at school.
Yeah.
And I remember that stuck with me the whole of my life. And I was listening to a podcast yesterday, in fact, of this guy, guy called Ed Lee. He's the presenter for Ski Sunday. And he was talking about working with some people with Asperger's and on the autistic spectrum. And he was like, I'm just putting it out there, but I think it might be a superpower. And without it sounding arrogant or, you know, you don't have it, I've got it. What I mean by that is, like, if you're out there and you're struggling, you're thinking, whether you're 60 or you're 8, you've got this energy, you've got this power, it's within you. Don't rush, don't worry, you're going to get there. You're going to tap into it at some point. And just have faith in yourself. You know, whatever you're doing is right. Wherever you are is right. It might be really hard and really painful at the time, but you're going to be all right. I hope. You know, I do believe in that. Maybe I've got a bit of a blue sky about all of this, or delusions of grandeur, but like in the thought process of this. But I think dreaming big is good in that sense, but don't pin everything on those dreams. Like, learn to be in the moment if you can. Easier said than done, but yeah, you've got this. And there's these amazing networks, like what you've grown, you know, keep being inquisitive. I always want to be inquisitive. I kind of love that. The Taoist philosophy. Is it Taoist? T-O-E-T-E-O? You know, that uncarved block, like Winnie the Pooh, you know, he wakes up, first thing he thinks about, honey. Next thing, gonna go see my pals. Like, it's a pretty good way to live life.
Yeah.
I am not Winnie the Pooh. You know, I'm probably one of the other characters. That there's a brilliant book.
You're a Tigger.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a Tigger. I'm a Tigger with elements of Pooh, with a bit of rabbit in me. But you know, it's I think there's a book, and I think it's called The Tao of Pooh, or The Tao of Pooh.
Yeah.
It explains
Taoism
through
Pooh.
Through Pooh. My sister told me to read that, and I will be eternally thankful to my sister for that. You know, she is one of the biggest inspirations in my life. She's an unbelievably organized. She got the organized genes.
Uh-huh.
Holy moly.
Her and dad part of Team Guesty.
Yeah, yeah. Digitally far away. Kind of, I get a poke or a kick every so often of a matter.
Well,
she's amazing.
Guesty, it has just been fantastic. I think that's the note to leave it on, what you just shared there. Mike, it has been great to have you on the podcast. Thank you very much for sharing your dyslexia story with us.
It's been a total pleasure. And if you're out there and you want to chat at some point, give me a call. I'm a talker, not a typer.
Great. I will put links in the description. How should people connect with you, Mike?
So you can go to my website, which is mikeguest.co.uk. That's guest spelled G-U-E-S-T. And that kind of takes you to all the social media handles and the Vimeo and all the Dawn Days. And I'm Mr_Guesty on Instagram, where you can see the stuff. But if you want to get away from social media, like, go and look at the website. And a thing we didn't touch on, I know you're going to tell me to shut up, but
no, go for it.
This thing called the Light Phone. It's miniature.
Okay.
And it's essentially a non-clever phone, if that makes sense. It's a burner phone, but you can listen to podcasts, music. It has your contacts. You can use it as a hotspot. But something I'm learning is I want to get away from too much social media, too much digital environment, because I spend so much of it to do with work. So I'm just about to start using this next week. I'm quite intrigued to live life every few days without a smartphone.
Okay. So it's a dumb phone.
Yeah. Or is it actually the cleverest phone that's ever been invented? Uh-huh. Will we become clever again?
Yeah. Mike, thank you very much for being here.
Cheers.
See you later. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.